Welcome to Hungry Dads, your guided tour through the delicate and often overwhelming balancing act between food indulgences and social acceptance. And now, as always, here are your hosts, Rod Budget and Hugh Gallen.
Hello and welcome to episode 21 of Hungry Dads. I'm Rod Budget.
I'm Hugh Gallen.
Hugh, coming out of episode 20 last week, the big duos of flavor analysis. Did you do any submissions since last week?
I did. I did about 12 submissions, which was more than I intended to do, but I got to admit, it was very fun and I got caught up in it. The main takeaway I had from it was the surprising amount of trouble I had with their filters. So Frito-Lay has some text filters for when you're entering your submissions. And one of my flavors, if you listen back to episode 20, was a Maryland style snowball, which is like a shaved ice, but that's what they call them in Maryland. And I had trouble submitting the word snowball. It kept stalling, and I get this error message with a 1-800 number at Frito-Lay. And I wasn't sure what the problem was, but I decided I'd go ahead and give a call to this number. And I hit some buttons to get to through the menu, and I finally got to Alexis in the promotions department at Frito-Lay. And she asked me what I was calling about, and I said, I'm about the Frito-Lay contest. I was on the site trying to submit a name. And I told her what it was and explained why. And then she said, oh, yeah, the text filters probably have a problem with the word ball. And I knew exactly what she meant, but I didn't ask any more questions. I didn't ask her to try to defend it.
Sounds like a potentially awkward conversation.
Yes, I'll say here and now, Alexis was friendly, kind, professional. And so I didn't push the issue. I didn't ask her to explain it or defend it.
I'm a little surprised that balls is flagged. That's a very common word. I mean, it is potential profanity, but it has a lot of meanings beyond balls.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they certainly had to go overboard to work to try to not make that, let this be abused. You know, it occurred to me when I saw this that, you know, arguably Frito-Lay has gone out on a limb adding their labels and branding to something that you can put almost any words on. So the fact that they'd play it very conservative, I guess, isn't that surprising. However, undaunted, I went back and tried several different things. I spaced out the letters on the word balls. That didn't work. Finally, what worked was I replaced my L's with capital I's and made the submission. And so, assuming the text was I think Arial or something like Arial, it looked like the word snowball. So when it went up on my Facebook, it looked just fine. So I kind of cheated the system. I don't know if that would disqualify me, but I was determined to get this one through. Similarly, I had two other text filter problems. One, which again, I'm sure is just them trying to make sure no one gets silly with it. This was very surprising. I had trouble submitting hot dog. And when I finally spaced out the word dog, D space O space G, that's when it accepted it. So I guess they didn't want people to submit dog flavored foods. And so that one had trouble with the filters as well. Lastly, I had a description in one of mine. It was an Italian dish, and I made reference to Little Italy and quote unquote wise guys, you know, like mob guys. And it was a very vague and harmless gag. But I got a pop-up that wouldn't accept it. And basically what it said was, let's not bring other potato chip brands into this. Let's concentrate on Lay's. That's because Wise is a brand of potato chips.
Right.
And once I took the word Wise Guys out of there, Wise, it accepted it. So once you knew about them, unsurprising filters to keep you from putting words on their bags that they didn't want to have there.
Yeah, they're being a little uptight, but I guess that's understandable given the situation and the amount of control they're giving to the American consumer. But I have a few follow-up thoughts and some additional insider tips coming out of episode 20 last week. We already spent an entire episode on Lay's Do Us a Flavor, so I'm not going to harp on it too much, but now that I've spent a little more time on the site, I think I have some insider tips potentially. So first of all, not to be a downer, but everything has been thought of already. You're not going to come up with a unique flavor idea. Glazed donuts was one of my proposed flavors last week. I went on the site and just randomly saw somebody that had submitted glazed donuts recently. So I did maple glazed donuts, which I think is a good tactic, and I'll expound on it in a little bit. Secondly, my main question that I was trying to figure out all week is, what's the tiebreaker if everyone is submitting the same flavors multiple times? And I finally found the answer, I think, from a Business Insider article from last year. And it's a quote from a Frito-Lay's marketing person. It said, while there were obviously multiple entries for the same flavor, the winner was based on the explanation for the inspiration behind the flavor. So I think it's interesting that they said obviously there were multiple entries for the same flavor. That just goes to show that everybody's thought of everything. But I think this bodes well for Hugh and his strong copywriting skills. I'm not sure if they're looking for marketing copy. It might be more of a homespun, emotional. I think that's very important, obviously. I also think he was spot on with his strategy of using as many adjectives and words as possible in the chip name. This sets you apart, potentially. If everybody's doing glazed donuts, the example I used, I said maple glazed. But even better, I think, is the more I read, I really think this year they're going for location-based Taste of America and something with kind of a historical or emotional attachment. So in my next round of submissions, I'm only going to propose flavors that have locations in the name of the actual chip. So instead of Frito chili pie, I'm going to say Texas Frito chili pie. Or instead of maple glazed donuts, Vermont maple glazed donuts. I think this is a strong strategy. And then within the copy, I might just be cheesy and make stuff up and say, hey, this is what my grandmother used to make on snowy winter mornings. Those are just some tips. You know, the more I thought about it and the more I played with the site and just acknowledging that everything has been thought of already. I don't think you're going to come up with this amazing flavor that just blows everybody away. I think you have to dig a little deeper, and hopefully those tips will help everybody out and give you a better chance at winning.
Yeah, Rod, I came to pretty much every same conclusion. And honestly, as excited as I was about my marketing copy and still am, I actually do tend to think that they're not looking for our copywriter. I think we use the word homespun. I think that's exact. They want stories. They want real people with real stories to tell. And mine were obviously not real stories. I don't think my slick New York marketing copy is going to meet their needs.
I think your copy is more likely to achieve your dream of getting hired and recognized by Frito-Lay themselves.
I've played out that fantasy several times in the last week.
Hungry Dads!
Rod, tonight, what I'd like to do is an evolution of a segment we've done before. If you remember in episode 9, I did a series of food confessions in which I shared with you in the audience some of my sins or confessions and about food, and I tried to justify them. And in that, we used our wives as a litmus test on the validity of my confession and the justification. I'd like to evolve that idea tonight into a new segment called Food Court. Judge Rodney T. Budget presiding. And like last time, I'll be confessing my food-related misdeeds and throwing myself at the mercy of the food court. I have some statements at my defense, and I have some information that can be shared by the prosecution, aka Mrs. Budget and Mrs. Gallen. You are Judge Rodney T. Budget. You are tasked with being as unbiased as you can be, giving your opinion, and ultimately finding me guilty or not guilty. In the end, based on the number of charges that you've found me guilty of, you must bring down a sentence, some penalty, punishment, or action befitting the guilty charges. Are you prepared, Judge?
I am prepared. All rise.
Confession number one. On more than one occasion, I've been alone for a weekend and I baked a full cake and I snacked on it. And then sometime before the end of that weekend, I noticed that I'd eaten an inordinate amount of the cake, basically more than half. So rather than stop eating and explaining the remaining cake to my wife, who'd been away for the weekend, I just power through and finish the whole thing before she got home, wash the dishes, and never speak of it. In my defense, I would say that baking a cake was cheaper and less lazy than just going to the store and buying a bunch of junk food. But if I were to give you the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, in addition to the cake, I did most likely buy junk food at the store and eat most of that too. Also, I have to confess that the first time I did it, and it has happened more than once, it was sort of an accident. Additional offenses were unquestionably premeditated. Judge Budget, I plead to the mercy of the food court.
Hubert H. Gallen, on this offense of baking and consuming an entire cake, I'm going to find you innocent of all charges.
Wow.
I think that you showed initiative by baking, which is good of you. You bought the ingredients, you worked, you earned your food. And secondly, once you ate the cake, more than half of it, you would have to explain to someone who returned to the house why there is only a quarter of a cake left. So I believe you were right in disposing of all of the evidence. I think that is okay. I would warn you that if you repeatedly do this, you mentioned you've done it multiple times, I'd say if you do it more than five times, the law might come after you.
Wow. Okay. Fantastic. Well, just to give you some perspective on your finding, I actually think Mrs. Budget and Mrs. Gallen were somewhat in agreement with you. Mrs. Budget basically said that a whole cake is a little over the top, but she liked that I was doing some home cooking that's arguably not as bad as buying processed foods. And Mrs. Gallen basically said, you just wanted to eat a whole cake. Don't try to use this whole wife thing as an excuse. And that I should basically eat a cake responsibly over time. My second confession is that when I order Chinese food for delivery, and again, I'm on my own here, I'm not with anybody else, I almost always order two entrees. My justification is that I have to meet a dollar amount for the minimum order, and one entree won't be enough. Leftovers never go to waste in my house, and frankly, the shame I feel when I see two sets of plastic forks and two fortune cookies in my bag for a solo order is punishment enough. I do have to admit that a small appetizer or a steamed vegetable would definitely achieve the minimum order price. And if I were being completely honest, in addition to the second entree, I have been known to get an appetizer as well. And I'm pleading to the mercy of the court with my honesty here. There's seldom leftovers. Or if there are, it's not half of the meal, to be sure.
Hubert H. Gallen, on the offense of doubling up your Chinese food order, I find you guilty as charged. This sounds pretty bad offense. Chinese portions are ridiculous. I don't know exactly what you're ordering, but they're big. And as far as meeting the minimum, I lived in New York for a while. I've grown up against the same challenge. I'll usually just order extra sodas, which isn't great, but I think it's better than ordering an extra entree. Lastly, you said there are rarely leftovers, which is hard to believe. If you were buying two entrees and eating them over the course of 4 days, I would find you innocent. But otherwise, I am forced to find you guilty and sentence you to a lifetime of stale fortune cookies.
Well, you have tapped into Mrs. Budget and Mrs. Gallen. Mrs. Budget said exactly what you said. The Chinese portions are huge. And she says, come on. That sounds right.
We judges have to be a little more formal.
Mrs. Gallen, again, says two entrees is absurd.
Wow. Yeah, this one's bad. That's why it's a lifetime sentence, honestly.
Mrs. Gallen goes on to point that the good thing about Chinese food is sometimes you order multiple items to share. But when you're alone, this doesn't work. My next confession for consideration is that when I visited my family over the holidays, I instantly went to locate my mother's homemade Chex Mix, which is my all-time favorite, and I shoved it to the back of the shelf. I did this so the leftovers, in this case, all of it, would go home with me. My plan worked, and it wasn't put out. In my defense, it's my favorite, and everyone else got plenty of snacks because there was a lot to eat there. Nobody really noticed, but I would have to let you know that traditionally all of this Chex Mix does get eaten up by the family, so people clearly like it. I plead on the mercy of the food court.
Hubert H. Gallen. On the charge of hiding your favorite snacks, I find you innocent. However, I think you have to be very careful with this one. You're intentionally hiding it, which I think is wrong. Borderline guilty, but I think you can play this one off as accidentally hiding it. I don't know if I'm being a fair judge here, but this one's pretty easy to get away with. So I'm on the fence. I'm going to find you innocent, but in the future, be sure to accidentally hide it. Maybe you throw it in the fridge and it has to, you know, go behind something with you throwing it. That way you can justify it. But if you're starting to like rearrange milk cartons and place it underneath vegetables, I will find you guilty in the future.
Would you like to venture a guess as to what Mrs. Budget and Mrs. Gallen said? I'll give you a hint. They said opposite things.
Well, Mrs. Gallen has been pretty harsh on you so far. So I will assume she's going to continue to be pretty harsh and say she does not find this acceptable. Plus, it's impacting her life directly, assuming she likes Chex Mix. And I will say Mrs. Budget was a little more lenient on this one.
Actually, no. Mrs. Budget said, this one's pretty bad. She reminds me that it's not nice to deny everyone else the Chex Mix. And if I like it that much, maybe I could ask my mom to make some more. But hiding it from other people is pretty much inexcusable. Mrs. Gallen was a little more forgiving, perhaps because she was actually present for all of the other snacks that were there and knew that there was really no victim here. Nonetheless, it's an out-and-out lie. I feel guilty.
Of the cases I've heard so far, this is the most complex and most difficult. I think, again, you have to throw it into the refrigerator and let randomness take its action. If you're good enough to throw it into a hidden spot, it's just an accident.
My fourth confession for your consideration, binging for the greater good. Sometimes our house ends up with an uncommon bounty of junk food, like the holidays, care packages from my mother, or after we have a party. Bags of chips, cookies, candy, and other snacks that we'd not normally have. I convince myself that rather than pacing it out over time and making the snacks last, it's more responsible to just eat it all up with reckless abandon in a week or so. My defense is that when the stuff's out of the house, I can start eating responsibly, maybe even diet, without temptation. Plus, my family won't be tempted by it or eat any of that poison, so it's almost like I'm taking a bullet for them. But if I were to give you the truth and the whole truth, I'd have to let you know that I don't really eat responsibly once that junk food's gone. It's been smartly suggested that junk food could be brought to my work to share it, to get it out of the house and not waste it. This is where I have to give the confession on the confession. There's been once or twice where I have pretended to bring food to the workplace to share, but I actually just kept it at my desk and ate it myself. The shame I feel is hopefully punishment enough. Judge Budget, I await your decision.
Hubert H. Gallen. On the offense of not getting rid of candy and just eating it all when it's in the house, I find you extremely guilty. This one is pretty inexcusable. There are multiple ways of getting rid of the candy. Like you said, taking it to work and actually sharing it. You sounded pretty emotional as you were confessing, so I think you know this one is bad. You were breaking up a little bit there. It's a tough, tough topic. I think you need some rehabilitation. I sentence you to 3 months in rehab, not exposed to any candies, going through withdrawals. I think you can be rehabilitated, perhaps, and then maybe you can snack responsibly throughout time and spacing it out. Until then, no candy for you.
All right. Wow, harsh sentence. Well, you definitely were in line with Mrs. Budget and Mrs. Gallen, both of who agreed that this was pretty bad. My last confession goes back to my youth. It was a youthful offense, and I hope you'll take that into consideration. In the lunchroom in second grade, my friend Kenny and I invented Mush Mush. Mush Mush was basically a pyramid scheme of potato chips. We would take an empty baggie, maybe contribute a potato chip or two, and then implore everyone else to contribute some of their chips. We'd take the collection and mush it all up into a fine, multi-flavored chip powder. All contributors got a taste, but then in the end, most of it was left over for me and Kenny. This was identified by a few of my classmates as a scam. Our friend Aaron mounted an effort to reveal Mush Mush as the scam he believed it was, but his message fell mostly on deaf ears. Mush Mush became a phenomenon. But our scam grew too big and word got out. The authorities, the lunchroom monitors, learned about Mush Mush and shut down the whole operation. Now, in my defense, I'd say first of all, as I've noted, this was a juvenile offense and the statute of limitations has to have passed by now. Also, everyone else's actions were voluntary. Nobody was forced to contribute their chips, although admittedly, the peer pressure was pretty high once the scheme got rolling. If anything, this is a white-collar food crime.
Hubert H. Gallen, on the crime of Mush Mush Pyramid Scheme, I find you not only innocent, but I commend you for showing such entrepreneurial spirit and ingenuity at a young age. First of all, you were a minor, which gets you off no matter what. Secondly, there was no guarantee that all of the contributors were going to get an equal portion, I assume. They contributed, they ate a little bit, you got a lot. You were the brains behind the operation, you deserve more. I'm a science guy, I appreciate inventing the Mush Mush. It sounds interesting, it sounds good. I think you were just being a fun-loving kid, and you should be commended.
Well, I appreciate that. You, Mrs. Budget, and Mrs. Gallen obviously appreciate a capitalistic spirit because that is similarly what each of them said. The idea was referred to as clever and with a lot of ingenuity and creativity. I suppose I felt some guilt about this, specifically because of our friend Aaron, who really did call us out as scammers to the whole class. And that certainly struck a chord in me, which shows that I do have a conscience here.
Aaron was a whiny tattletale.
Maybe. Hopefully you've learned something from this experience in court today. Are you satisfied with the judge's decision?
Talk to my wife.
Hungry Dad.
So this segment is similar to Food Court, but instead of focusing on Hugh's past and present snacking transgressions, I'm going to give Hugh some hypothetical snacking or eating scenarios that present ethical, moral, or maybe just personal dilemmas. Where Food Court was kind of a look at Hugh's ghosts of snacking past and present, this will be more of a visit from Hugh's ghost of snacking future.
I fear you more than any specter I have yet met.
So I'll read each scenario, and then present Mr. Gallon with a simple question. What Hugh gonna do about it? Number 1. It's time for your young son's birthday party, Hugh, and you're responsible for picking up the cake. When you get to the bakery, they tell you that you are entitled to a free smash cake for the kid, in addition to the larger pre-ordered cake that you're supposed to pick up. Are you familiar with smash cakes?
No, what's a smash cake?
Glad you asked. The smash cake is a very small, about 6 inches in diameter, cake, and it's meant to be for the young son to smash into and make a mess for pictures and things like that. It's so you don't have to mess up the nice, pretty cake. So you've got the smash cake. Mrs. Gallon has no idea the smash cake even exists. It's free of charge. You didn't know about it until you went to pick the cake up. There are no records on the receipt. Do you eat the smash cake on the way home? Do you bring it home and try to hide it? Do you simply bring the smash cake home and say, hey, we got a smash cake. What are you going to do about it?
Oh, okay. There's a lot of factors at play here. Obviously, there's a setup where one can get away with it entirely without there being an issue. Then there is the aspect of it where you're taking the smash cake away from your child. I think I would... Let me start here. I would almost certainly eat the cake. The question is when I would eat the cake and how transparent I would be about it. One of the reasons I would eat the cake, almost certainly, is because I'm not sure I believe in a smash cake in the first place. I don't like kids with food all over them. It completely grosses me out. So I would not encourage the whole smash cake thing in the first place.
What a convenient stance.
So then the question for me becomes, do I just eat it and never speak of it? Or do I eat it and then confess to it? Or do I bring it home and have a conversation with my wife about whether or not we want to have a smash cake moment? Which, whether I got to eat the cake or not, my vote would be against. I would bring home the smash cake, talk to my wife, and try to convince her to just let me eat the cake.
I think that's a fair and rational stance. I thought for a second you were going to say you were going to eat the cake on the way home, which I wouldn't have judged terribly because I might do the same, but that's a bold step.
You know what I would do? I would just buy another cupcake and I would eat that. No doubt about that. I would pay for the cake, take the smash cake, and then go back to make a separate transaction for a cupcake at the bakery where I can eliminate that paper trail. Enjoy the cupcake. And then go home and try to convince my wife to eat the smash cake as well.
I think that's a good strategy. Scenario number 2. It's Halloween night, and you are responsible for passing out candy to the trick-or-treaters. You said in the past that this is a night for the kids. A particularly adorable 7-year-old boy dressed as Superman comes to the door. You love the costume, obviously. Superman says, trick-or-treat, and then holds out a huge pillowcase that is already filled with candy. You give Superman a few pieces out of the candy bowl, but then things turn sour. Superman spots a full-size Snickers bar sitting on a table in the entryway. You've been saving this candy bar for yourself at the end of the night. You promised yourself you wouldn't take any kids' candy tonight, and you treat yourself to the Snickers bar that Superman is now eyeing. You can see what's happening. Suddenly, Superman says, "Whoa, can I have that?" while pointing at the candy bar. What are you going to do about it?
This one's pretty easy. He's getting the candy bar. Assuming wow. The way he asked was as adorable as you said, then the answer is yes. I listened back to our Halloween episode and listened to my passionate speech about how Halloween is for the kids. Now, I would certainly reward myself for my generous action. I would therein take what I believe is an equal share and then a little bit of extra then out of the candy bag for myself to reimburse myself. But yes, I would encourage that Halloween enthusiasm, assuming it wasn't an obnoxious request, but it was in fact as sweet as you made it sound. Yes, that Snickers bar is for that young man.
Scenario number 3. In December, you went to the doctor for a physical, and it was determined that your blood sugar was very high for your age. The doctor advised you to cut way back on sugars, perhaps even consider eliminating sugars altogether for a while. You agreed that it was finally time to buck up and go on a no-sugar diet. You even decided to start running and exercising, starting in the new year. On January 1st, you go out for a run. You're feeling good about yourself and the upcoming year of health. When you get back home, however, you see a Mrs. Fields delivery van parked in the driveway. You walk to the front door, curiously, and see a giant cookie cake being delivered to the house. You rush to see what all the fuss is about, and see the frosting beautifully saying, "Hugh Gallen, 2014 New York City Employee of the Year." You're overwhelmed with joy and pride in your accomplishment. What you gonna do about it?
I'm going to have some of that cookie. I'm going to have some of that cookie.
How much? How soon?
I'm going to have a fair amount of it fairly soon. Under the already judged and indicted theory that I should just eat it to get it out of my sight. Maybe not the whole thing immediately, but a solid share of it. So that then after that excursion, I can start my diet for real.
Food court aside, I do think in this scenario it's more excusable to do that because you can get it out of the way and just reset on January 2nd. Versus if you eat a slice each of the next 7 days, then the diet and health year really is delayed by a week.
The real shame in this one is that I have no hesitation in saying, well, the doctor has given me this strict order, I would cheat right away. Under the premise that I would get started thereafter and stick to it. Now that is the real problem with that kind of cheating, is that you can make those kind of promises. But in the scenario you drew, it's pretty obvious. The first day of my effort, this falls into my lap. I am indulging in that, and I am expecting to take the heat from the appropriate heat from Mrs. Gallen on this matter, because she is undoubtedly aware of the doctor's diagnosis. I don't think I would hide it. I would try to play it off as cute and adorable, and then reap the consequences.
Scenario number 4. You're at your favorite corner pizza place near your house. You're starving and haven't had any nice hot pizza in several weeks. It's an extra unique occasion because Mrs. Gallen and the kids are running some errands and you have time to dine in and relax with 4 slices of pizza and a 32-ounce soda for good measure. Man, this is going to be a great meal. But a few moments after you order, just as the pizza is being put in the oven and you pay, your phone rings. It's Mrs. Gallen. You answer and learn that Mrs. Gallen has a flat tire. She's not on the highway, but on a fairly busy residential street about 10 minutes away from you. The kids are with her. It's cold outside and getting dark. She isn't panicked, but she's also obviously pretty stressed about the situation and needs help ASAP. The pizza might be warm by now. You still don't have a soda in hand. You've already paid. What you gonna do about it?
All right. I can imagine the geography of the situation pretty accurately, and I'm placing the pizza place around the corner because it is.
Yep.
I can get that pizza out of the oven in whatever state it's in. I can get that soda, hopefully relatively easily. I'm leaving. I'm getting back to my house to drop these things off, and then I'm headed for them. I'm thinking that can all be done in less than 5 minutes, which doesn't significantly impact my ability to help. I don't think I want to show up there with these things in hand. I don't.
Yeah, that was going to be my question. Why are you dropping the bounty off? Because it's going to be there when everybody gets home.
Yeah, it just seems a little indulgent in that moment to have it in my hand. Now, I understand having dropped it off is more indulgent, arguably.
It's like the Seinfeld episode where Elaine gets the Juju fruits before going to see her boyfriend who's been in a car crash.
Yeah, exactly. I have the specific geography where I just have a sense that it's a really small inconvenience to drop it off at home. I also suppose imagining bringing it there and then having to just physically manage it when I want to just get to helping. It seems like for the greater good to drop it off at home.
You're doing a service. You're doing a service by dropping
it off.
With
a little bit more reflection, I also would not be afraid to tell the pizza place, hey, put those aside. I'll be back. I've already paid. And then come back to the pizza place. If I had thought of that before I got three steps out of the pizza place, that's what I'd do. Because I think the pizza man would be solid with my reasoning if I just explained briefly what was going on. So my first instinct was to track it back home. But now that I think about it, I'd have a quick conversation with my friendly pizza man, explain what's going on, and I have no doubt that those slices would be waiting for me when I get back.
I think those are both logical solutions. The second one may be a little more noble. But again, you are starving and you're not going to eat for a while now. So just remember that.
Thank you for adding that. All right, one of those slices. Oh, no doubt about it. One of those slices is going with me. Oh, that's easy. It's 10 minutes away in a walk. Oh, two slices
minutes,
are going with
ten
me.
Minutes.
All right. Oh, this is easy. Hang up the phone. Ah, Mr. Pizza Man, you're not going to believe this. I just got a call from my wife. She's got a flat tire on Blank Street. Can I get two of those right now? I'll come back for the other two in my soda. Awesome, thanks. And I'm out the door. Two slices are gone by the time I'm there, no doubt about it. And I know I've got two more slices waiting for me, which is perfect.
I think this is a more complex scenario, and we've talked through it, and I think we've come up with a great solution. Scenario number 5. Go back in time when you and Mrs. Gallen first started dating. Let's say it's your second date, and you're going to dinner and a movie. You don't particularly care for what you ordered at dinner, and you don't eat much of it. You're nervous, after all. While walking to the movie, you can't stop thinking about the jumbo tub of popcorn and giant soda, both with free refills. You're hungry now for sure. Oh, and the movie you're seeing is 3 hours long. You don't want to look like a pig, but is unlimited popcorn and soda really that piggish? What are you going to do about it?
Second date, it's a pretty easy answer. I would not indulge. I would not want to give an impression that I'm a big pig or that early on. I like to let those types of pieces of information float out over time. So I would actually go hungry on that second date. And it's not so much noble as it is, you explained that I'm on a date with my now wife. So I know that I want it to go well. I know from my memory that I'm into this date and I want to give off the best impression I can. So yes, I was interested in misleading my girlfriend, now wife, as much as I could on the food angle for quite a while, to be perfectly honest. So
we can all
so
see
yes,
why.
So yes, now that she's married to me, I've lifted the veil and it's been uncovered what a monster she's married to.
Hungry Dad.
So I think that gave a good insight into Hugh's mind, and the scenarios gave us some good hypotheticals into how he thinks. And as an added bonus surprise for Hugh Gallen, I asked Mrs. Gallen the same questions and what she thought Hugh would say. So let's go back and quickly compare notes.
Wow, this is a surprise. Mrs. Gallen,
I can see Hugh sweating. He's sweating. He's turning red.
Mrs. Gallen did not let on at all.
This was top secret. She was very, very good and very cooperative. So again, we're bringing the Gallen family players into this. So scenario number 1 was the smash cake scenario. I believe Hugh said he would likely bring it home and still try to eat it and buy a cupcake on top of it. Mrs. Gallen said, quote, "Surprising to even myself, I think Hugh would bring the smash cake home. However, I don't think we would want to use it as a smash cake since Hugh detests food on kids' faces and wouldn't give it to him clearly for that purpose. But he would bring it home and we would somehow incorporate it into the birthday." So she was partially right about you bringing it home and not wanting the kid to smash into it, but she still thought you would incorporate it.
That's where my negotiation skills would kick in, and I would convince her the other cake is more than enough, and may as well just enjoy this other one. But okay, good. I can live with that. That's mostly a match.
Scenario 2 was Halloween night Superman. Hugh said without a doubt he would give the Snickers bar to Superman. Mrs. Gallen said, quote, "Oh, this is a tough one. I think Hugh would politely tell the kid that he can have a couple more candies of his choosing out of the candy bowl, but the full-size Snickers is his. Or he would maybe even play the kid card and say that the one is being saved for his daughter."
That's good.
So
that's a good one. I didn't think of that.
That's a great one. Even Mrs. Gallen has underestimated Hugh's passion for Halloween and kids in this one. I think that goes to show that Hugh is a man of the people, a man of Halloween, a man of the children. Scenario number 3 was the health cookie cake. Hugh was exercising, he has high blood sugar, New York City Employee of the Year cookie cake. Hugh said that he would definitely dig into the cookie cake and eat a lot of it right away. Mrs. Gallen said, and I quote, He would have a little bit of cookie, but wouldn't go crazy. If a doctor scared him into being healthy, I think he would do it. But he wouldn't deprive himself completely. He'd save some and maybe share it with the neighbors. Yeah, I think she was partially right. She thought
the definition of some
wouldn't deprive yourself completely.
The definition of some is the real sticking point here.
Scenario number 4 was the pizza flat tire, where we really thought this one out and ended up with Hugh going with 2 slices to go and 2 slices to be saved at the pizza place. Mrs. Gallant said, Hugh would tell them to take the pizza out of the oven and he would take them to go. You enjoy your pizza when it's not too hot. He would also say, excuse me, man, but I have to run out. Could you grab me that soda real quick? I'd really appreciate it. So you would leave there with all the slices, you would eat it in the car, plus your soda. I thought this was really, really good of Mrs. Gallant. I was a little surprised. I thought this would be one where she would say, he's got to get out of there, he's got to help me as soon as possible, but she was okay with you getting the food and the soda.
Yeah, I think the only thing she missed there, and it's most probably because she's not nearly as experienced at walking and eating as I am, but negotiating a soda and 4 slices while walking is actually pretty troublesome, and I truthfully wouldn't want to slow down my travels at all. I have confidence in handling 2 slices of pizza at a brisk walk, and that's why I would leave 2 of them in the soda behind.
Yeah, walking and eating. Check out episode 8, Eating on the Go. Hugh has a beautiful, beautiful breakdown of walking and eating if you haven't listened to it yet. I think that's a good point, and I think Mrs. Gallant is to be commended for letting you get the food before you help her out. Last but not least, second date with Mrs. Gallant, the popcorn, unlimited refills. Mrs. Gallant said, quote, he would definitely get the big popcorn and soda, saying he got it for us to share.
Interesting, interesting. She was probably now and even then not aware of the level of insecurity that I felt even at date 2. So with that, you know, I can appreciate her confidence in my confidence. But if I put myself in the mindset of date number 2, I am still trying to put on the best impression.
Hugh Gallant was a cool customer. Hungry Dad. Visit our website at hungrydads.com. Follow us on Twitter at hungry_dads. This has been a Hungry Dads production.
I think I literally dreamed about it. And then I had another thought. It's that they're going to call you. And I'll work really hard to be happy for you.
Yeah.
Like, I would be, but I would be insanely
deep down,
jealous.
Deep down, you'll be just mad.